We're holding on Lamates Umud Beys. Three lines from the bottom. We learned yesterday about statements by Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yehuda in connection with Tam and Muad. We said that you have a case of an ox belonging to a cheres shoyt of a cotton that gored. So Rabbi Yaakov had said that you have to pay chatzin nezek. And we were discussing why should that be. So Rava had explained, we're talking about that the animals are moored. Now, a moored, normally you would pay nezek shalim. Here, what it is that he guarded the apotropos, who's supposed to be responsible for the animal in lieu of the chereshoyt of a cotton. He was guarding it, but not really, not with shmirah meula, not with the best kind of guarding, in which case it would be an onus, but rather with shmirah pchusa, with the minimum kind of guarding. Like we said yesterday, for example, Rashi brings that, for example, he put up a regular door and that would withstand a normal wind, but it wouldn't withstand a ruach she'ena metzuya, a stronger wind than normal. So now a stronger wind than normal came and knocked down the door, and the animal went out and caused damage. So now what we're saying is that Rabbi Yaakov agrees with Rabbi Yehuda on a couple of dinim, one of them being that that for a muad it is enough to do that kind of shmirah. However, also on the other hand, that a muad is a tam plus in the sense that sad tamus bimkoimaimedus, in the sense that the dinim that applied to it as a tam continue to apply to it as a muad plus the additional dinim of a muad, which means therefore as a tam you would have to do shmirah meula in order to be completely potter, and here it was shmirah pchusa. Therefore, Rabbi Yaakov would end up saying that. That the apotropos is paying chatzin nezek for it. Well, whether the apotropos is paying or whether the or whether we're, whether we take it out of the yesomim, that would be we discussed yesterday the machlokas of Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanina on that subject. But anyway, the point is, according to Rava, Rabbi Yaakov does agree with Rabbi Yehuda. As far as those two points, as far as the point that you need only shmirah pchusa for a tam, but for a muad, but on the other hand, the fact that a muad also has an element of tamus still to it, and therefore, from that point of view, to be potter from that, you would need shmirah meula. Then Abaye had disagreed and said that no, that Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yehuda are actually arguing. And Rabbi Yehuda is saying that you pay nezek shalom, and Rabbi Yaakov is saying chatzin nezek. So now the Gemara says, so three lines from the bottom, Omelet of Achaba Abaya L'Ravina. Abaya. I understand according to Abaya, D'Amar Pligi, that he says that Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yehuda are arguing Shapir. Then we understand why we have to say that the first, so we actually had two Brises in this connection. We had one Brisa that said that, we had one Brisa that was saying, was talking about, is talking about a muad, and we have another braisa then that was saying that that was saying so we had the first braisa is the one that says Rabbi Yaakov Meshalem Chatzin Nezek, which we said really meant Rabbi Yaakov says that you're paying Chatzin Nezek, and then you have a second braisa where it says clearly that where it says more clearly Rabbi Yehuda Mechayev Rabbi Yaakov Amar Chatzin Nezek. So then we have two different braises. So we would say that, so according to Abaye, it's easy enough to understand Shapir. Then we understand the first braise is talking about Muad. And then the second one, and so the first braise that was talking about Muad, and therefore, in other words, what Abaye is getting out from that is saying that that Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yaakov are arguing on the point, do we actually appoint an apotropos to when you have an ox belonging to a cheres shoyt of a cotton? We appoint an apotropos to watch the animal, sure, but does that apotropos actually supervise the collected? Do we actually collect from the goof of the animal under his supervision? That would be the machlokas Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yehuda. That Rabbi Yehuda would say that yes, and therefore you're collecting the chatzin nezek of a tam from it. Well, therefore, if the animal is a muad, then you're collecting nezek shalem. And Rabbi Yaakov would say that no, you're only paying the half of muad because the half of tam is not to be collected under the apotropos's watch. So
So what you said, the first braisa means what, and the second braisa you
we had
didn't
like.
mention.
Yeah, so sorry, we had two braises over here. One where it said Rabbi Yaakov says that you pay chatzin nezek, And the second braisa says that Rabbi Yaakov, the second braisa says, Rabbi Yehuda said, Rabbi Yehuda Machayev, that Rabbi Yehuda is saying, Yechayev, Rabbi Yaakov Amachatzi Nezer. Now, according to Rava, the two bright, according to Rava, the second bright, in the second braisa, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yaakov are not arguing. Rabbi Yehuda is being Machayev, but he didn't say how much. Rabbi Yaakov is explaining Chatzi Nezer. According to Rava, we're saying that the second braisa is talking, or that both braises really are talking about a muad. According to Abaya, we don't need to say that. According to Abaya, at least the first braisa is, according to Abaya, we can say that they are in fact talking about muad. At least the first braisa is talking about a muad. The first braisa, when we only have Rabbi Yaakov's opinion and says that we collect only chatzi nezek. So Rabbaya is not going to understand that that's referring to a tam, because that would require us to say that ma'amidin apotropos, that we appoint an apotropos to collect for a tam chatzi nezek. And from the second braisa, where it says, where Rabbi Yaakov says that you were in the second braisa, it's clear that it's not so, because in the second braisa you have when it says Rabbi Yehuda Machayev and Rabbi Yaakov Oymer Chatzi Nezek Huda Meshalem, then according to Abaya, that implies the second both braisas, in other words, necessarily have to be talking about a muad, because otherwise there's no reason for Rabbi Yaakov to have to say Chatzi Nezek, because obviously a time you pay Chatzi Nezek. Therefore, Abaya is going to understand both braisas are talking about a muad, and the reason why in the first one Rabbi Yaakov says chatzi nezek, and in the second one he also says chatzi nezek, and in the first one we didn't have Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, so we're saying appoint Abaye, he and Rabbi Yehuda are arguing. The argument would be, do we appoint an apotropos to collect that nezek? Do we appoint an apotropos to collect that nezek? According to Rabbi Yehuda, yes. According to Rabbi Yaakov, no. We're not collecting the chatzi nezek of tam, only the extra chatzi nezek that comes as a result of it being a mu'ad. So according to Abaye, if we understand it that way, then we understand why we couldn't say that the first braisa was talking about a tam. Then it would require us to say that Rabbi Yaakov says that you have an apotropos to collect for a tam, to collect the chatzi nezek for a tam, and it's clear from the second braisa that not, because then in the case of a muad, then the second braisa is unquestionably talking about a muad, since Rabbi Yehuda says nezek sholim. Then it would require us to say that Rabbi Yaakov is saying that you do appoint an apotropos for that. And the second braisa makes it clear Rabbi Yaakov can't possibly be saying you appoint an apotropos for a muad, because then why are you paying only chatzi nezek? According to Abaye's understanding that he and Rabbi Yehuda are arguing. So Shapir, so we understand why the first braisa has to be talking about a muad, and the second one also, why both braisas have to be talking about a muad, according to Abaye. But Rabbi Acha bar Abaye says Elo l'Rava. But according to Rava, you have to ask.
According to Abaye, one second. Yes. According to Abaye, the both braises talk about a muad. One talks without a.
So what we're saying is, in the first braise, Rabbi Yaakov just says you pay chatzi nezek. Now, and the second braise, now that could be understood to mean like Rava, that Rabbi Yaakov is basing that on Rabbi Yehuda's opinion and saying that there's a reason why we reduce it to chatzi nezek in this case, because he did shmira p'chose, he did a weak kind of shmira, and therefore he's potter on the side of muad, and he's only chayev for the side of tam. Comes the second braise, says Abaya, that says that Rabbi Yaakov is arguing with Rabbi Yehuda, where therefore, according to Abaya's understanding, he's arguing with Rabbi Yehuda, therefore he obviously can't hold like him as far as that detail. Therefore, we have to understand it differently. In the second braise, Rabbi Yaakov is paying, that is saying that you pay only chatzi nezek, meaning not the chatzi nezek of it being a tam, but rather the extra chatzi nezek by virtue of it being a muad. Meaning, in other words, so therefore he's saying that the fact that the animal is a tam, okay, but you don't have an apotropos supervise the collection of chatzi nezek for a tam. So all we have is the extra chatzi nezek that comes by virtue of the animal being a muad. So that would explain Rabbi Yaakov's opinion. So both braises are talking about a muad, and in both of them, Rabbi Yaakov means that you're not collecting the half that comes by because of it being a tam, you're only collecting the new half that came about by it being a muad. So according to Abaya, we understand. So if we follow Abaya's understanding, we understand why both braises have to be talking about a muad. Ela l'Rava, but Rav Acha bar Abaya continues. According to Rava, the Omer loy pligi, where he says that Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yehuda are not arguing, and both of them are, and both they're both saying the same thing, that the half that Rabbi Yaakov is talking about that you collect is the half of Tammuz, not the half of Mu'adus. Well, then you have to ask, Ademuki lo b'mu'ad, why are we saying that the first Braisa is talking about a mu'ad in the first place? Noitma b'tam, wouldn't it be more straightforward to say that that the first Braisa is referring to a tam, and say, and now in Rava's explanation, you had to say that that we were talking about that he did shmirah, that he did shmirah p'chusa, that it was in Rava's explanation, rather, we said it was a muad and he had only done shmirah p'chusa, where we have later on in the parak, Rabbi Huda holds that shmirah p'chusa is enough for a muad. Again, like putting up a regular door rather than a stormproof door. So we could understand more straightforwardly on the face of it that the first Braisa is talking about a tam, and that would explain why Rabbi Yaakov is saying you pay chatzi nezek, because after all, chatzi, what's chatzi nezek doing by mu'ad? And instead say, either Rabbi Yehuda do'ovid le'shmira p'chusa, v'lo'ovid le'shmira mo'la, and say, then depending on what you want to say, as far as what Rabbi Yaakov holds, whether he holds, now Rava had said that necessarily Rabbi Yaakov holds like Rabbi Yehuda, as far as the idea that by a mu'ad, shmira p'chusa is enough. But why do we need to say that? Instead, we could say, Rabbi Yaakov, we're not sure, he might hold like either of the two Tanoim that deal with this later in the Perek, either Rabbi Yehuda, do'ovid le'shmira p'chusa, v'lo'ovid le'shmira mo'ula. If we follow Rabbi Yehuda, if he follows Rabbi Yehuda, then the case would be that the animal was a tam, and he did shmira p'chusa, but not shmira mo'ula. And then Rabbi Yehuda holds that by a tam, that's not enough, therefore that's why he's chayev v'chatzi nezek. Either Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, do'ovid le'shmira klal. And if he follows Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, then we would say that he didn't guard it at all. And that's why he's chayev v'chatzi nezek. The Tanya, as we learn later on, in a Braisa, later on in our parak, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, echad tam v'echad mor, j'shaman shmira p'chusa p'turin, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, now you're going to have other opinions, we're going to get to them later on in the parak, but Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov holds that with either a tam or mor, shmira p'chusa is enough to pater him from paying. As long as he did shmira p'chusa, then Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, if the animal got out and caused damage, then he's going to be potter because he did guard the animal. So then in that case, so we could understand the Braisa that way. We could understand it referring to a tam. Now Tosfos points out earlier in the sugya, earlier on Lama Tesama days, we did say that if it's talking about a tam, then wouldn't it be poshut? Of course, a tam, you do chatzi nezek, and then what is Rabbi Yaakov informing us? So now the Gemara is saying, the Tosfos explains, because before we didn't have the concept of tzad tamos b'mkoma emedis. We didn't bring in the point that the concept that when the animal is a mu'ad, that it still retains a certain status of tam. So now, before the Gemara had asked, why doesn't it just say Rabbi Yaakov Machayev? And we would understand Machayev means he's Machayev, whatever a tam pays, which is chatzi nezek. Now that we're saying we have this consideration of tzad tamos b'mkoy ma'emedes, then therefore he has to clearly say chatzi nezek, which tells us therefore that we are talking about a tam, and that we're saying the apotropos supervises the collection of the chatzi nezek. If we said Machayev, then we would assume that it's talking about a mu'ad. So why don't we understand it that way? It would be more straightforward to understand it that way. And the point is, what the result of that would be, v'hokamash malon, sort of Achabar Abaye is asking, v'hokamash malon, in which case the chiddush of that braisa would be, v'hokamash malon, Rabbi Yaakov, rather, d'ma min l'hapatrubas l'tam, l'gvas megufoy, precisely the point that we've been discussing in the sugya, that when it comes to a tam, an apotropos is appointed, and he's responsible for seeing to it that the chatzi nezek is paid out of the goof of the animal. So why don't we say that? Why don't we say the braisa is talking about that, rather than having to say that the braisa is talking about a mu'ad, and then requiring us to say that the chatzi nezek that Rabbi Yaakov says is only the part of, only as a result of the part that it's a result of the part that it's a tam. So that would explain, what we just said before, what Tosfos says, Rashi also says, just more briefly, Rashi says that therefore, that is why in earlier in the sugya, we said, we asked, why isn't just said, Rabbi Yaakov Machayev? Now we understand why, because if you said Rabbi Yaakov Machayev, then it would mean that we are talking about a Mord, and Machayev means his Chayev Nezek Shalem. So now, therefore, he'd have to be telling us that no, Chatzid Nezek, which once we say Chatzid Nezek, automatically we understand that means that we're talking about a Tam, and why would there be a Chiddush with a Tam that he pays Chatzid Nezek is because we're talking about over here, it belongs to a Cheresh Shoyt of a Cotton, and we're saying that an Apotropos needs to be involved. So why don't we learn the Braisa that way? So Ravina answers him, Hochi Kamar. The reason why Rava wants to explain the Braisa that way, because Choda de Ispe Tauti Taima, because he would rather explain the Braisa, given that Rava understands, like we said before, that Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yehuda agree on certain points, then Rava would rather say that the Braisa is talking about a Muad, where he did Shmira Pusa, because then you have Choda de Ispe Tauti, you have one Braisa, one statement of Rabbi Yaakov, from which we would be able to, de Ispe Tauti Taima, from which we would be able to learn 2 points. That he holds like Rabbi Yehuda as far as Shmira Pchosa for a Mord, and that he holds Sad, and within that, Sad Tamus Mim Koyma Emedis, he's still responsible for the half of that fact that it was a Tam before, and also the fact that we set up an Apotropos. And that Apotropos is responsible for seeing to it that the Tam you pay me go for it. If you only said the Braisa is talking about a Tam, then he would only have one Chiddush, and therefore Rava would rather say that if we have this Braisa, Rabbi Yaakov says you pay Chatzid Nezek, we would rather assume that there's greater Chiddushim in it, and therefore to say that we're talking about a Mord. So that would explain Rava's explanation of the Braisa. So in short, you have Abaya would say that both Braises are talking about a Mord, and the reason he's paying Chatzi Nezek only rather than Nezek Shalem is because Rabbi Yaakov is saying you don't have an Apotropos collect the half for the Tam, so therefore you can only have the half that's added as a result of it being a Mord is being collected. That would explain Rabbi Yaakov's opinion. Meanwhile, Rabbi Yehuda would be disagreeing and saying that no, you do set up an Apotropos for it to collect everything, and therefore Nezek Shalem is being paid. According to Rava, we're saying also both Braises are talking about a Mord. The reason why you're paying Chatzid Nezek, according to Rabbi Yaakov, is because we say both Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yehuda are agreeing that you pay only Chatzid Nezek. Rabbi Yehuda never said you pay Nezek Sholem. He only said Machayev, and Rabbi Yaakov is clarifying that Machayev means Chatzid Nezek because you're... You are having an apotropos to collect from the goof, but in this case over here, really what you're doing is you're collecting only the part for it being a tam, not the part for it being a mord, because there was shmir of chosa, and therefore as a mord he'd be potter. Okay, the Gemara says Ravina Omar. Ravina says there's another way of understanding the Braisa. Now, like this, we have a bias saying that Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yaakov are arguing on the point according to Abaye, they're arguing whether you appoint an apotropos to collect from a tam. According to Rava, they're not arguing at all. Ravina Omer, Ravina says there's another way we can understand. Rishus Mishana Ikebenayhu. We can say that the machlokas Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yaakov is about the point of Rishus Mishana that we started discussing yesterday. When the animal goes from one person's Rishus to another, does that change its din? We're going to have a Mord. So suppose the animal became Mord under the supervision of the Apotropos. Then the cheresh or the shoter or became the cheresh was healed, the shoter was the shoter became normal, the cotton grew up. So now it goes more into the Rishus. Now the Apotropos doesn't have to be involved anymore. Rabbi Yehuda Sova Hareu B'chaskasei. Rabbi Yehuda will hold it, still retains its chazaka of being a Mord. But Rabbi Yaakov Amar, Rishus Mishana. Rabbi Yaakov says, even this is considered Rishus Mishana, therefore it goes back down to a Tam, and therefore it's paying only Chatzin Ezek. So that would be another way of explaining Although the Rashba wonders in that case, then the expression should be Rabbi Yaakov Einem Shalom Elachatzi Nezek, to imply more clearly that he's saying that look, Rabbi Yehuda, you're saying it's still a Mord and Nezek Shalom. I'm saying that no, it's been downgraded back to a Tam now because of Rishus Mishana, and therefore it's paying only Chatzi Nezek. So then, so the Rashba wonders why Rabbi Yaakov wouldn't be using that expression in this case. Okay, in any case, so we have a few different ways of explaining what Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yehuda hold respectively. Next, the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, apotrupsin mishamim min ha'aliyah. Apotrupsin, now we discussed yesterday what happened. So now we're gonna so now the Gemara is gonna go on to a related topic. We've been talking about an apotrupus in terms of paying out the chatzi nezek or the nezek shalem, whether the payment for a tam is done under his supervision or not, and what happens by the case of muad. And we discussed yesterday who is it that pays out. Are we paying out when we're paying for? When it comes to a muad, are we paying out from the apotropos's property, or are we paying out from the assumim's property? Anyway, so now let's talk about the related case. What happens if a shur belonging to assumim kills a person? Now, when a shur or any other animal kills a person, we're going to start talking about tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, the details. The Torah tells us the animal is given skila. The first few times that the animal does, it's potter because the animal is still the owner is potter because it's potter from paying anything else because the animal is a tam. If this happens repeatedly and is worn, then the animal becomes moored. Now, not only is the animal chayev misa, but the owner also is chayev to pay something. The expression in the pasuk is v'gam ba'olav yumos. The expression is that the owner is also put to death. But we explain, and we're going to be learning this, that it doesn't mean that the owner himself is actually executed by Beis Din. It means he's chayev misa b'dei shamayim for not being careful with his ox. And instead, the Torah continues in kofo yushas olav that you would make him pay a monetary ransom to the victims of the nizek. That only when the animals are moored. By the way, we're going to learn in the Gemara tomorrow, how is it possible if the shur is given skila after the first or the second time it does it, then how does it ever become a moored in the first place? We're going to deal with in the Gemara tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, several possible scenarios. Anyway, the point is, now what happens if this ox belongs to Yisomim? So what happens as far as the kofo? So Tana Rabbanan, apotrupsin mishamin min haliyah. The apotrupsin, when they're responsible for watching the shur and for payments, so if the animal is moored, then they pay min haliyah, then they pay out of the aliyah, out of the other property, not out of the guf. And as we learned before, within that you have the machlokas, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Chanina, whether the apotrupsin lay out the money or whether it comes directly from the property of the yisaimim. Anyway, but the Braisa says, "V'ein meshalmin koifer." However, in that kind of case, the koifer is not going to be paid if the animal is a moored. For that matter, here we're mentioning as far as Yisoymin, but the Marashal points out the same thing would apply also to a Cheresh and a Shoita, and would also apply for that matter if the owner went to Medina Sayyam. In all those cases, then the apotropos is not supervising the payment of a kofir. Well, the Gemara asks, Man Tana Kufra Kapara. Well, which Tana is it that says, now there's two ways of looking at that kofir. You can say that it's a kapara. The person was saying the mazik, the owner of the animal, should have been chayev misa b'dei shemayim, and instead the Torah is giving him an opportunity to redeem himself by paying money. Or we could look at it that it's compensation to the yoshim of the victim. Now they lost their breadwinner, they lost a valuable asset in the family or whatever, and therefore you're compensating them for that. Those two possibilities are called kufra kapara, that the kofer is a kapara, versus kufra mamona, that we say it's an ordinary monetary payment. We'll have the, like you have nowadays, you have compensatory damages in American law. When a person is killed in an accident or something, then they have part of the damages that will be paid out is that they'll figure out the person's lifetime earnings or however they figure it out exactly. So that would be kufra mamona. So man tana kufra kapara, which tana is it that's saying that the kofer is essentially meant for a kapara, the yasmi lavne kapara ninu, in which case we would say that yisomim, being children, they're not yet chayev in mitzvahs, so therefore they're not chayev in the concept of kapara yet, and that would be a reason why to say that they're potter from kofer. Rishonim, by the way, bring up the point why we wouldn't say the apotropos himself pays the kofar. After all, he's responsible for watching the animal. So the shittim kubetzis brings from the ra'ah. We learned yesterday there is the consideration. We don't want to discourage people from becoming apotropsim. So it's one thing when there's something that he can collect later on from the yesomim, then we can say, fine, he won't be discouraged from being an apotropos by having to lay out, because eventually he'll be able to collect from them when they grow up. But here, given if we say that they're potter from kofar, means he's going to be putting out this money for the kofar and he's never going to be getting it back. So therefore, he may say, why should I bother becoming an apotropos and watching the animal in the first place? Therefore, we don't want to make him liable for kofar. A different answer. There's a Talmud of Rabbeinu Tam who wrote a pirk. Talmud Rabbeinu Tam, whatever Aleph stands for over here, Rabbeinu Tam, Vereish Aleph. He explains that when it comes to Nezek, we're saying, look, you know, there's Tikkun Olam involved over here. You don't want that animals of Yisomim are just going to be running wild and causing damage without any recourse. But Kofar, if we're saying this because of Kapara, then we're not necessarily going to make a takana to that effect. So therefore, so the apotropos is not paying for one reason or another. And according to this way of looking at it, the yesomim are not paying either because they're children and they're not subject to the concept of kapara. Which Tana says, Amar Rav Chista, Rabbi Shmuel, Bnei Shmuel, Rabbi Yechim ben Breukah, that would be according to Rabbi Shmuel, the son of Rabbi Yechim ben Breukah. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, when the Pasuk says, Benos and Pidyan Nafshoi, the Pasuk says, he, the Mazik, should pay a ransom for his soul. So what does that mean? Dmei Nizek means we figure out the value of the Nizek, and that's the amount that he pays. That's the Tanakhama says. Rabbi Shmuel, Benosh, Rabbi Yechon, Ben Breukah, Dmei Mazik. On the other hand, Rabbi Shmuel says it's the value of the Mazik. We figure out how much the Mazik himself would be worth if he were to be sold as a slave or something. Because the purpose is to pater him from Misa B'dei Shemayim. So therefore, it has to be his own value where he himself deserves to die. And therefore, we're saying that instead, he's paying this kofar. So, my lab b'hokam iflagi. So shouldn't we assume that that is the machlokas? The Rabbanan savri kofra mamonahu. The Rabbanan, the Tanakama, holds that the kofar is mamon. So therefore, it has to be. So obviously, therefore, it's going to be the value of the nizik. The same as any other mamon that you're paying for damage is the value of the damage that was caused. The same way over here. We figure out the value of the damage is there was a nizik over here and he was worth X amount as a slave. And now he's not because he's dead. So therefore, that would be the amount you pay. So that would be they hold that kufra mamona. Rabbi Shmuel ben Oshur, Rabbi Yechim ben Breukah, Sava kufra kapara. Whereas Rabbi Shmuel would hold that the kofar is a kapara, and therefore he would say that. That it's the value of the mazik because it's meant as a kapara for himself. So we'd have the nafkamina between them. Of course, would be as far as this case of the yesomim. The Shittim Kobetzis also brings from a Talmud of Rabbeinu Peretz, what if the Yoshim want to be Moichel? If you say Kufra Mamona, then they have the ability to be Moichel. If it's a matter of Kapara, then they can't be Moichel. Another point is, what happens, for example, if the guy doesn't have what to pay? If you say it's Mamona, then he's Potter. If you say it's Kapara, then he's going to have to, then he better go raise the money for that Kapara, otherwise he's going to be punished Min HaShemayim. So if we understand the machlokas that way, then it comes out the braisa that we quoted before that says the apotropsin don't pay kofar would be according to Rabbi Shmuel. But the Gemara says, Amar Papa loy, not necessarily. You could say that both Tanoim hold that the kofar is a kapara. The machlokas would be as follows: Rabbanan savri b'dinizak sheminan, Rabbi Shmuel b'nosher Rabbeinu and Berakah savri b'dimazak sheminan. The machlokas is yes, it's a kapara, but even within the possibility that it's a kapara, we could say that you go according to the value of the nizak rather than the value of the mazik, and that would be the machlokas. So my time with Rabbanan. So why would the Rabbanan say we go according to the nizak? Because they would say nemra shisolamata v'nemra shisolamayla. Because in two places in Parashas Mishpatim, when it talks about these dinim, it uses the shodash shos or shosa, which means to shis, whatever is the shodash, which means to place. So by kofar, the expression is kecholash yushas olav. He pays the kofar according to what is imposed on him by beis din. So earlier, a few psukim earlier, you have a case where two people are fighting and one of them injures a pregnant woman and causes her to miscarry. So also you have this word yoshis, you have the word kasha yoshis ala bala isha. He pays according to what the husband, the father of those unborn children, imposes on him, meaning that they go to Beis Din and Beis Din figures out the amount that he should have to pay the husband as compensation. So we have this shoda shist in both places. Mala halim b'dinizek. Now, when it comes to the pregnant woman, what are we calculating according to? Obviously, we're calculating the value of the nizek. We're saying we figure out how much. Essentially, we figure out how much would she have been worth while pregnant with a child, and how much is she worth without that? Meaning, hypothetically, if she were to be sold as a slave, as a maid servant while pregnant, such that the potential buyer is getting not only a shifcha but also potential children, then he would pay more. Whereas if she's not pregnant, then he would be paying less, and that would be the difference that the mazik pays. Now, obviously, then therefore we're going according to the value of the nizik. Therefore, the Tanakhama says, therefore that Abonin say afkan the nizik, the same way when it comes over here to the kofer, also the Torah is implying that it's the value of the nizik. Whereas Rabbi Shmuel says, look, I mean, the pasuk says that he should give a ransom for his soul. So that would be who's given the ransom, who's given the kofer, the mazik. Therefore, it has to be the value of his soul, the value of his life. So therefore, it would be that we go according to the mazik. And Rabbanan, the Chachamim answer back, they say, ain't pidyon nafshik siv. Sure, of course, it says pidyon nafshik, but so that, but miyo ki shayminin, bid the nizik shayminin. However, the actual payment goes according to the value of the nizik based on that comparison of the word yoshis from earlier, from the case of Dmei Vlodis, where the case of paying for the unborn children versus now. So actually, there is an interesting discussion about this. Is this an actual gzeira shava that the Chachamim are using? If so, then we would say, look, by the Dmei Vlodis, it's not kapara, it's only mamun. So how could they be saying over here that it's kofer? We have a concept called ein gzeira shava lemechta. We don't have a gzeira shava only by halves. If we're going to do a gzeira shava, we learn the entire thing. So a number of Rishonim and Achronim discuss the possibility that maybe it's not really a Gzeira Shava. It's called Yomad Sosum and Amaforosh. We're just defining what does the word Yushas mean? Means the value of the Nizek. For that matter, the Ritva explains that given that it's not a Gzeira Shava, that would explain why is the Gemara not bothered by, well, why doesn't Rabbi Shmuel learn this Gzeira Shava? And is it Mufna or not, as the Gemara usually does when we're dealing with Gzeira Shava? Because we would say it's not, in fact, a gzeira shava, it's only a gili milsabal. Okay. So anyway, the point is that machloikas doesn't necessarily have to do with this point. So therefore, when we say that the yisomim are not paying kofer, that's not necessarily only according to Rabbi Shmuel. The Chachamim may agree with that point as well. They're just saying when a kofer is going to be paid, it is the value of the nizik rather than of the mazik. The Gemara tells a story from which we're gonna derive a couple of questions as far as the dinim of kofer. The Gemara says meshabach leRava leRav Nachman v'derav Acha by Yaakov de Adam Gadol. Rava was telling Rav Nachman and praising Rav Acha by Yaakov and saying that he's an Adam Gadol. He's a great Talmud Chacham. Omalei, so Rav Nachman says, okay, when he comes to you, then bring him to me. You're saying he's such an outstanding Talmud Chacham. I want to meet him. He also legabei. So when Rav Acha by Yaakov came to visit Rav Nachman, Omalei boy minay milsa. So Rav Nachman says, ask me something. As we have the famous expression, shailas chacham chatzi tshuva, that a good question by a Talmud Chacham is itself half the answer. So I want to hear what kind of good question, what kind of great question in Torah you Rav Acha by Yaakov can come up with. So Rav Acha asked him, "Shur shal shnei shutfin. Suppose you have an ox that belongs to two partners, ketzed mishalman kofer. If that ox becomes moored and you end up having to pay kofer, what is the what do we do as far as paying the kofer? Do we say mishalam high kofer b'high kofer? Do we say that each one of the two partners pays their own kofer? Can't." Kofer achod amrachman of leishne kofrin. The Torah, after all, says you pay only one kofer, not two. So, like this, we don't. We're not going to say that the mazik should. Now, as far as nezek, sure. What we're saying is, all we want is the nezek should get paid. So each one of them is going to be paying. Rashi points out that each one of them is going to be paying his half of the nezek, and together the person is receiving full nezek. No question about that. But when it comes to kofer, if now that we just established that kofer is a kapara, both of them need an individual kapara. A half a kofer is not necessarily going to be enough for that purpose. On the other hand, the Torah is not saying that you have to pay two kofrin. The Torah is saying that you pay one kofer, implying it's only one. On the other hand, high chatzi kofer, and if each one is paying only half a kofer, then kofer shalom amarachman of loy chatzi kofer. Then you would say that on the other hand, the Torah is saying you pay one kofer, not you pay a half, because after all, each one needs their own complete kapara. So maybe therefore each one should be paying their own complete kofer. But on the other hand, then it comes out that the nizik is gaining more than he should. Now, Tosfos draws a distinction. Of course, you know, we have, for example, when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos, if we have something was carried out to Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, let's say, or some malacha was done by two people where neither one could have done it on their own, then we say each one is chayav a full chatas. So Tosfos says, okay, they are each one would be chayav koris, but if they did it b'mezid, therefore we can say they're chayav a full chatas when they did it b'shogeg. And also, fine. So each one is bringing their own chatas. Who cares? Nothing wrong with that. But here, after all, the kofer is going to somebody else. So why should the other guy gain? Because here the shor belongs to two people. So that's the question. Adi Yosef become ayin ba. So now Rabbi Nachman was sitting and thinking into this question. So then Rabbi Acha says, I have another question, also as far as kofer. Starting with Tznan, we learn in a Mishnah in Erchin, Chayavi Erchin and Mashkin and Oysan. When a person is owes an Erech to the Beis Mikdash, then the Gizbar or Beis Din will take a Mashkin from him to pay it. So a person has said, for example, I pledge my Erech to the Beis Mikdash, and we look up in Parshas Bechukosai, and we find, for example, he's a man between 20 and 60 years old, and therefore his Erech is 50 Sloim. If now he doesn't pay that Erech in time, then Beis Din, or the Gizbar of the Beis Mikdash, is going to go and take a mashkin from him until he pays out. On the other hand, the Mishnah says, Chayav v'chatos v'ashomis ein mashkin an oisan. On the other hand, when it comes to a chatas or an osham, then we don't do that, because he himself, he required, because the chatos or the osham is for kapara, we assume that he's going to bring it as soon as possible, because he feels bad about the aveira that he did. He doesn't want to be punished by Hashem, and therefore he's going to bring it as soon as possible. Whereas Erchin was more that he voluntarily gave a donation, and therefore he could say, I'll give it when I get around to it. If not that much of a hurry, therefore we need to take a mashkin from him. So now the question is, chayve kofrin mai, what about when a person is chayav kofer? Given to kaparahu, on the one hand, the kofer is a kapara, therefore kachatas va'oshem dami umichma chomer alavev leboi mashkune. Maybe it's considered, therefore, like a chatas or an oshem. So he would consider it something very serious to himself, and therefore he would say, therefore he wouldn't delay it unduly, and therefore we don't need to take a mashkin from him in order to collect it. The same way as a chatas or an oshem. Oiduma, given to the chavrahu deboi misvalei. Or maybe we say, since he has to pay it to somebody else, mamoinahu, maybe therefore it's only a matter of mamoin, v'loyla gavoyahu, it's not something that's being given to Hashem, it's not something that's being given to the Beis Mikdash, v'loy chomer alei, therefore he maybe wouldn't consider it to be such a serious thing, uboy mashkune, and therefore you would have to take a mashkin from him in order to force him to give it, because otherwise he may say, it's not money to hektish, I'll get around to it. So that would be the question. Now Tosfos says that the question basically is not so much as far as Beis Din, the Yoshim of the Nizik themselves, would they be able to come and take a mashkin from him in payment of this? Because otherwise he may not get around to it. On the other hand, the Rashba says that no, that's if he doesn't want to pay, then sure, Beis Din is going to go and collect from him just like any other Nizik. But that would be the question. Do we do that b'chlal, whether we're talking the Yosha and Nizek, or whether we're talking Beis Din? And the point is, do we say that, or do we say, like a chatas or an asham, he's going to be sure to bring it soon enough because he doesn't want to get punished from Hashemayim, and therefore there's no need to take a mashkin from him. Inami, or another way you could look at it is, kiven dehulei chota, since after all, when it comes to the shermuad, he himself hadn't personally done an avera, unlike when he's bringing a chatas or an asham. So umamoinehu da'azik, it's only his momin that caused hezik. Loich chomim milseil avei, maybe he doesn't consider it to be such a serious matter. Uboi mashkuni, and therefore again, we would have to take a mashkin from him in order to force him to pay, because otherwise he may say, I'll get around to it eventually. So that was Rav Acha's second question. So Rav Nachman answers him, Shavgan, leave me alone. Don't keep asking me questions. Is stagar b'kamaisa? I was already closed up, meaning I was already stumped by the first one. I don't even know an answer to the first one, and you're already asking me a second one. So don't keep on asking me, because I still have the first one to figure out. The Oruch has a different, has a bit of a different girsa, and he explains that it means Rav Nachman is saying, I'm already sick from your first question, that I feel so bad, I can't think of an answer to it, and you're already asking me a second one, so please, I give up. Fine, you've stumped me. An interesting explanation from one of the Achronim, Sefer called Ateras Chachamim, that Rav Nachman, after the first question, he would have tried to answer it by a din that says in Masechta Makkos, as far as Edim Zomim, but now when Rav Ach Bar Yaakov asks the second question, then Rav Nachman realizes that Rav Ach Bar Yaakov doesn't hold according to the premise that he would have wanted to use, so therefore he's saying, look, your second question closed off, stagar, in Lashon Sagar, it closed off the avenue that I would have used to answer your first question. So now I give up. I have no good answer to either one of your questions. Interesting thing over here, by the way. Usually, when the Gemara starts out a story with Mishtabach Bei Ba'odim Gadolhu, that one Amora says to another, "This is a great person," and he says, "I want to meet him." Many times in the Gemara, it comes out that the one who wants to meet him finds some flaw in the visiting Talmud Chacham. He points out that he's not learning something correctly. Here it's the other way around, where Rav Acha bar Yaakov shows up Rav Nachman and stumps him. The Gemara says, now, so let's go on to another point as far as Tam versus Muad, and talk about particularly the matter of a Shoyal. Now, a Shoyal is one of the four Shoyimrim, so what happens in terms of, we're going to get back to the point of Rosh Hashanah over here and various other things in connection with that. So, Tanan Abonin, Shalei b'cheskes Tam v'nimtza Muad, a person borrowed an animal on the understanding that the animal was a Tam, and it turns out that it turns out that it was a Muad, and now it's gored, and now the question is, what is the dinim, and what are the dinim as far as him paying? So the din will be the owner pays half the nezek and the shoyal pays the other half, because after all, the shoyal once the shoyal takes responsibility for the animal, then he becomes responsible to guard it and is chayev for its nezakin. But in this case, where he, as far as he knew, it was a tam, fine, as a tam, he'd be paying chatzin nezek, therefore that's all he's paying chatzin nezek. The owner has to pay the other chatzin nezek because he didn't tell him. If he had told him, then the shoyal would be completely responsible, because then he'd be the one, then he'd know he has a muad animal on his hands and he has to guard it. On the other hand, the braisa continues, huad beveis shoyal vechzir labailim, if it became muad while it was in the shoyal's possession. So during the time when the shoyal had the animal, it gored three times and became and was worn and based in and became muad, vechzir labailim, and then he returned it to the owner, bailim mashamim chatzinezek, then the owner pays chatzinezek because it gets downgraded back to a tam, v'shoyal potter miklum, and the shoyal is potter because now it goes back to being a tam because of shinu reshus, because reshus mashamim. Now, the Gemara is going to ask further on in the sugya that we didn't say Rishus Mishana the first time around. Why are we saying it now when the Shoyal returns it? That the Gemara will deal with later. But first, let's analyze the beginning of the Braisa. Omamar Sholim Cheskos Tam Nimtza Muad by the Mishaman Chatzinezek Rishoyal Chatzinezek. We're saying that in that case, where he thought that it was a tam, and now it turns out to be a muad, so the owner is going to pay chatzi nezek, the shoyal is going to pay the other chatzi nezek. So the question is, why is the shoyal chayev at all? Why should he be chayev for the second half of the nezek for the part that it's a muad? Or why should he be responsible for the one half that it was a town? Le Malay, why can't he argue to the other guy? Toda She'ili, I borrowed an ox from you. Arya Lo She'ili, I never borrowed from you a lion, meaning, in other words, an animal that's fierce and an animal that's fierce and dangerous like a lion. In other words, if it were a tam, it wouldn't necessarily have gored. So therefore, it's only goring because it's a moor and it's habituated to doing that. So therefore, I never intended to borrow a moor in the first place. How can you be mechayev him for anything? So Omar Rav, so Rav answers, we're talking about that the shoyl does know that this ox does regularly gore. However, he doesn't know that it was three times yet. So therefore, he already knows that this animal is starting to be prone to goring. So therefore, we can say that he knew that there's something about this animal that you have to watch it more than the average animal. Not necessarily to the extent of a mord, because he didn't know it actually became a mord. He didn't realize that it already happened three times. Or the Torah Chaim learns a little differently and says that we're talking about that. We're talking about he knows that it was more than three times already, but he didn't know that they had already been made and based in. Maybe each time the owner made some kind of pshara with the nizik, and therefore it never went to Beis Din in the first place. So Tertus Chaim explains that we're talking about, so he knows this animal has already gored many times, and if it had actually gone to Beis Din, it would already been a mord. As it is, he thinks that did not happen, and the owner didn't volunteer that information. Now it turns out it's a real full-fledged mord. It's actually gone to Beis Din, and it's been declared a mord. So therefore, but at least he knows that it has gored various times, less than three times, according to Rashi, even more than three times, according to Toras Chaim, and therefore he should have a responsibility to watch it, at least as a tam, even though he doesn't know yet if it's moored, therefore we can be mechayev him the chatzi nezek for a tam. So the Gemara says, okay, well, the name alay, still he can argue, tam she'ili, moored lo she'ili. Okay, so then I borrowed a tam, I didn't borrow a moored, so now it's a moored, it gores more often, so therefore I wasn't taking on myself that kind of guarding. Well, the Gemara says, okay, mishum da omalay, so the owner answers back, so if so, well, so what? After all, eat tam hava, and if it was a tam like what you thought, palganizka boi shalomi, you would have to pay chatzi nezek, hashtanami, zil shalom, palganizka. Therefore, fine, over here you're also on the hook for chatzi nezek, because after all, fine, even according to your svara, you would have been paying chatzi nezek. Now, there's no reason really that the Gemara even had to bring that in. It's really more of an introduction to the rest of the questions that the Gemara is going to ask over here. So the Gemara says, v'neimalei, so why can't he say, why can't the owner say, fine, but there's another difference. E tam hava mishtala megufay. If the animal had been a tam, then the chatzi nezek that I would be paying would be only out of the guf of the shur, so therefore I wouldn't really be losing out, because the shur doesn't belong to me, it belongs to you. So therefore, if half the shur, if part of all of the value of the shur is being given away for the chatzi nezek, I wouldn't have lost out. Whereas like this, you're saying that I have to pay chatzi nezek. Like this, you're saying the animal is a mord, and therefore nezek shalom is being paid, and I'm having to pay half out of my aliyah, and you're having to pay half out of your aliyah, so therefore I'm losing out. Which Tosfos points out that we learned before, we said Rabbi Yehuda would hold sad tamos min koymai medis, that a mord, we said according to him, is a tam plus, meaning that the dinim of a tam still continue to apply to it. So according to that, if we looked at it like that, there wouldn't be a question, because then he'd say that, look, the half as a tam is being paid me gufo either way, and only the half of a mord, which is the part that the owner of the animal is responsible for, that would be paid min haliyah. So the whole argument over here in the Gemara, this particular argument, and another one that the Gemara is going to bring soon, is only according to the Chachamim who disagree with Rabbi Yehuda. Anyway, why can't he say that? But then I would have paid out the half, and it would have been paid me gufoy, so it wouldn't really have been on me anyway. It would have been on you. Whereas like this, I'm having to pay half out of my aliyah. So the Gemara answers, Mishum de Omalei, because the owner can answer back, Soif, At lav turda bois shalom lididi. And if that had happened, if it was paid out megufay, what would happen? You still wouldn't get off with nothing. You would have to, after all, have to repay me, because it was my ox. So yes, we would say if the ox is worth 100, for example, and the whole chatzi nezek was 100, and therefore the nizek was going to take the animal, you after all wouldn't get off the hook for that. You're a shoyl, you're chayev to give me back my animal or its value, so you'd have to be paying me $100 anyway. So then fine, so you're not really, so one way or the other, either the animal would be taken away in payment of the nezek, and then you'd have to compensate me for its value, or directly you're paying out the chatzin nezek out of your money. Either way, you're not losing out anything, so therefore you have no claim against me that you should say that you're part of. Okay, so the Gemara says, v'neima lei, still, why can't the shoyl make another argument? This is, by the way, an example of the kind of thing that they mentioned in Hayom Yom, that when something is really negeya to a person, when something is really a particular concern of a person, then he'll come up with all kinds of ideas that he never would have been able to under normal circumstances, because Rotzen has such a powerful effect on a person. And we have these kinds of examples where even a simple person, even an Amoretz, or even women or whatever who don't learn Torah, would still come up with all of these arguments, al pi halacha, which are considered valid, and the Gemara deals with them, even though they may not know the actual halacha, because when it's negeya to them, then that person comes up with ideas that they never would have otherwise. Anyway, so now the shoyo can make another argument. E tam hava, if the animal had been a tam, medina umiftirina. I could have, after all, chatzi nezek, as we've learned earlier in the Masechta, is a knas. We know the concept called moedib a knas potter, as we've learned before, that if a person is chayev a knas and he admits it in Beisdin, then he's potter. He's only chayev when edim come and testify that he's chayev in it. Well, very well. I would have admitted, I would have said in front of Beisdin that my shor did it, or the shor that I borrowed did it. I would have been potter, because moedib a knas potter. Whereas now, if the animal is a mu'ad, I can't do that, because now it's not a knas anymore. Now it's mammon. Now Tosfos points out there is later on in the Masechta, we touched on earlier, and we're gonna learn in more detail later in the Masechta, that we have a machloikas Rav and Shmuel, where the moedib knas remains potter when it comes when edim do come afterwards. Moedib knas va'achakach bo edim. So Shmuel, who holds that he would be chayev in that case, would hold that we could be talking about where Adam did come later, and therefore that would be an answer. So therefore, the question over here would be primarily according to Rav that he would be potter even in that case. Anyway. So why can't he argue that? Now, there is the opinion that we learned earlier in the Masechta that the chatzi nezek is actually mamon, that it's, we would say, the two ways we said we can look at it are that essentially most animals are not prone to goring. This particular one is, so therefore really he should, so therefore this one gored once or twice. So really, Me'ikra din, he ought to be potter completely, but the Torah is penalizing and putting him a knas on him in order that he should guard it more carefully. The other way, that would be that pauganis knasa. The other way of looking at it is most animals do not gore. The other way of looking at it, rather, is most animals do gore. So by rights, he ought to be chayev nezek sholem, but the Torah gives him a break and reduces it to chatzi nezek until it becomes a mord. And according to that, we would say it's mammon, it's like any other payment of money. So even according to the opinion that Palga Nizka Mamona, name alay, the shoyl should be able to argue, e tamhu, if the animal had been a tam, have a marikna leila agma. I would have been able to make the animal run away to a meadow, meaning, in other words, an end. Because after all, even if we say Palga Nizka Mamona, for sure the collection of money for a tam is only migufoy. If the animal is not available, then there's no goof to collect from. So therefore, he's saying, so why can't he say that? I would have done that. I would have made it run off to a meadow, and then you wouldn't be able to collect from it. Whereas now, as a mord, I don't have that option, because as a mord, you're not collecting from the goof of the animal. Now, a bunch of Rishonim deal with the question, what kind of an argument is that? I mean, everything we've been saying so far is based on that he's doing something that's valid according to halacha. Whether we're talking about that I would have guarded it differently as a tam versus a muad, it would have been paying me gufay and I wouldn't be on the hook for it, et cetera. Here all of a sudden he's saying I would have done something illegal. How does that work? So Tosfos explains that would have mean, and in fact Tosfos says, look, I mean, Beis Din would put him in nidui if he doesn't pay up. So Tosfos says, fine, but what he means is, if I had done that, then I would have said, then I would have been able to say to the Nizik, look, the animal is not available anymore. It ran off to the meadow. So you may be able to collect from it if you can find the animal, but maybe not. You know what? Instead of worrying about that, fine, let me just give you something, a small amount to compensate you for your trouble and leave me alone. In other words, he's saying I would have worked things out with him privately without going to Beis Din in the first place, because I would have told him, look, you know, I kind of have the upper hand over here. The animal's gone, and if you don't find it, you're not going to be able to collect at all. So that would be one way of working it. That's how Tosfos learns. Tosfos Shantz brings another point. He would say, okay, so Beis Din would put me in Nidui. I could live with that. Whatever the case, the point is, why can't he make that argument and say that I would have done that? The Yamshul Shloima, the Marshal, points out another idea, and he says, no, obviously we're not usually going to say that a person can do something illegal to pater himself. What we're saying is that here he's saying, look, you know what? You, owner, after all, I mean, it's kind of your fault as well. You didn't tell me that this animal was a moored, so therefore I wasn't careful enough with it. Therefore, you were unfair to me. Therefore, I have the right maybe to do in something in a way that's unfair to you, namely to make the animal run away and then no nezek can be collected from it at all. Anyway, so why can't he argue that and say that therefore there's a difference between tam and moored? So the Gemara says, you're right. So Ella Hocha Mayaskinen going to act in Beit Din v'Tafse. We have to necessarily be talking about where Beis Din grabbed the shur before he had the chance to make it run away. So now the shur is already in Beis Din's hands to see what they do with it from there. So now, therefore, so the shur is paying Chatzi Nezek and the owner pays the other half. So now the Gemara says, Ihochi, well, if that's the scenario, Bailam Amai Mashamim Chatzi Nezek, then why is the owner have to pay the chatzi nezek of muad? Namely, now the owner of the animal has an argument the other way around. He should say, now you've caused that my shur was grabbed by somebody where I can't take them to Beis Din, because, in other words, you did things in such a way where Beis Din ended up confiscating the animal in order to pay off with it. So therefore, you've caused me a loss. Therefore, why should I have to be paying for the other half of it? And Tosfos says, in other words, the point is that as soon as the animal gored, the shoyl should realize, you know what, there's a good chance this animal is a mord. It gored. It's unusual for animals to gore. It's unusual for a tam to gore in the first place. Very likely, he should think that this was a mord, and therefore he should take extra care to make sure that Beis Din doesn't manage to seize the animal as a mashkin for the debt. And therefore, so why can't the owner say that it's your fault? If you had been more careful with it, Beis Din wouldn't have grabbed it, and then we could have worked something out. And the answer is Mishum de Omalei, because the Shoyo can answer back. Soif, after all, Lav Maliyah Haiv Mishnami. Look, the animals are moored anyway. Beis Din, if they didn't have the Shoyo to collect from, they would have collected from some other asset of yours. So you wouldn't have been able to make it run away and say, therefore, no collection can be done from it. Because look, either way, Beis Din would be collecting from some other property of yours. Well, the Gemara asks, Nicha Hecha de Isla Nichsi. Well, sure, that works if the owner has other Nechasim. What about where the owner has no other nechosim? After all, can't the owner say, in that case, I would have made sure that the show runs off to the meadow, so they can't collect from it. I don't have any other assets, so they wouldn't have been able to collect from me. And the answer is, Mishum da Amalei, because the show can answer back. The same way as I'm meshubad to you, that I have to return you your shur, the same way I have an equal shibud to the nizik, in the sense of midir abnasin, based on abnasin's din. The tanya, this is called shibud midir abnasin. The tanya abnasin, minayim l'noshe b'chaveri mona b'chaveri b'chaveri. How do we know that if Reuven, that if Levi owes money to Shimon, and Shimon in turn owes him the same amount to Reuven, minayin shemitzian mizev noisin lazeh, how do we know that we take the money from Levi and give it directly to Reuven, and Levi can't say to Reuven, lav bal dvorim didi at, you're not my bal din, I have no business with you, I only deal with Shimon? We say that no, we give it directly to Reuven. And it means also that Shimon can't say, I want to be paid off now by Levi, and later on I'll get to paying Reuven in my own good time. We don't say any of that. Shenemar, Talmud Loimar, therefore, Rav Nosson says, because it says in the Pasuk, V'nosan la'asher oshamloi, talking about a case of where a person stole money from somebody else, you give it to the one to whom he's guilty. Meaning you give it to the one to whom ultimately the money belongs to. So therefore it means that you go directly from Levi to Reuven. So the same way over here, the shoyer would say, look, you're the owner of the animal. You're responsible to pay for the nizik. So I'm doing that proactively. I'm paying the nizik directly out of the shur. You can't say that, no, you should have made the shur run away and I would have dealt with the nizik on my own terms, because I have a shibud to the nizik as well by virtue of shibud the did of nasan. And therefore, so there's nothing wrong in what I did, and you have no claim against me for doing things that way. So now, with all of those claims and counterclaims, then the result is what we say in the Braisa, that the shoyl is paying half the nezek, the half that he would have paid had the animal been a tam, and the owner is paying the other half of the nezek because the animal is after all a muad, and therefore he's chayv another chatzi nezek. Okay. Now, though, the Braisa continued, who had beveis shoyl? We said, if the animal became a muad in the house of the shoyl, v'achzira l'baylim, and he returned it to the owner, then we said, baylim v'sham and chatzin nezek v'shoyl potter miklum, then we said the owner pays chatzin nezek, and the shoyl is completely potter. Now, potter on the face of it, because of reshus mashana. So the question is, say for reshus mashana, reisha reshus ena mashana, why is it that we're saying reshus mashana only in the end of the braisa, and we're saying, therefore, when it goes from the shoyl back to the owner, then it goes back from being more at the tam, whereas in the reisha, we didn't say that. So Omer Rabbi Yechanan Tavra. So Rabbi Yechanan says, yes, there is a contradiction. In the Braisa, Misha Shonazu Le Shonazu. The one who taught the first half of the Braisa did not teach the second half. Necessarily, we would have to say that the two parts of the Braisa are according to different Tanoim and they disagree with one another. Rabba Omer, Rabba says not necessarily. Midere, you can say the whole Braisa is according to one Tana. Midere Shir, Rishus Eine Mashana, Seifanami, Rishus Eine Mashana. No, we can say that both parts of the Braisa assume that Rishus Eine Mashan. So, the Sefer, Hainu Taima, so why is it in the Sefer that goes back from being Mu'ad to Tam, De Omale, Mishum De Omale, because the owner can say to the Shoyl, Lav Kol Kaminach De Miyad Etzlei L'Toroi. You don't have the Koyach to make my Shur into a Mu'ad. Meaning, in other words, how does it become a muad? By goring repeatedly and being warned and based in. Look, it's your fault. You obviously didn't watch the animal well enough, so that's your problem. It became a muad under your watch. As long as it's in your possession, you're gonna have to treat it as a muad. But now that it's coming back to me, now that you're done with borrowing it and you're returning it to me, I shouldn't be responsible for it becoming a muad. As far as I'm concerned, you should have watched it better and prevented it from becoming a muad in the first place. And therefore we can say that now when it comes back to me, it becomes a tam. So that would assume that we don't say Rishus Mishana, but in this particular case, the owner has a valid reason to say that it never became, that as far as I'm concerned, it never became or it never should have become a muad in the first place. Rapapa explains differently. If we say that given that the Sefer is obviously saying Rishus Mishana, because Rapapa doesn't accept that argument of Rabba, to say that that there should be a difference in that regard, to say that it's a muad as far as you and not as far as me, then no, the sefer were obviously saying reshus mishana. It goes from the shoyl back to the owner, therefore it goes back to being a tam. Then reisha nami reshus mishana. Then in the reisha we would also say reshus mishana v'reisha hainu taima. So the reason why in the reisha we're saying that it does not go back to being a tam, just because the shoyl borrowed it, mishum de kol makom shahoylach shem b'ayla b'olav, because wherever it goes, it has the name of its owner on it. Meaning, in other words, the fact is it still belongs to the owner. So therefore, there's not really a reshus mishana in this case for it to change its din. We talked about yesterday the possible reasons behind that din, where Rashi says the reason is because it's a technicality. The warning that was given to one person doesn't transfer to the other. So here we would say, okay, the fact remains, though, it does still belong to the owner. So therefore, the warning goes along with it. And therefore, when it damages, Again, if the shoyl knew that it was a moor, he's going to be chayev nezek shalem. And if he doesn't know, then we said he's going to be chayev chatzin nezek and the owner of the other half. Then we have whether the point that the Meiri had made that by in a different environment it may behave differently. Fine, but still here it's not. It's only temporarily in that other environment. It's not that it hasn't been sold or transferred or anything like that. So therefore, not necessarily is that going to change the behavior of the animal. And therefore, we would say in the Reisha, says your papa, that it can still be considered, that it can still be considered muad, and it doesn't change to tam just because it was given to the other person. Just because it was lent, just because it was lent out to the other person. Okay. Now, we said in the Mishnah, we said that an ox that's used in a stadium or a bullfight or whatever, where they provoke it, they train it and provoke it to gore, then if it kills a person, it's not chayiv misa. We talked about yesterday, does that mean even if it kills somebody outside of the bull ring, or does it mean only in there? And that's machlokes rishonim. Anyway, Iboyelahu, the question the Chachamim asked, mahu l'gabi mizbeach? What about, would you be able to take an animal that was used like that in a bullfight and use it as a korban to bring on the Mizbeach? The fact is, an animal that kills a person is possible for a korban even when the animal is not going to be chayiv misa. So do we say over here that the fact is it killed people, therefore it's possible for a korban, or do we say that it was ba'onis, and that's why we're saying it's potter in this case, from Skilla, so therefore the fact that it was Ba'onis maybe is reason to make it that it could even be a korban. So the Gemara says, Rav am a kosher, Shmuel am a posel. Rav says it would be kosher as a korban, Shmuel says it would be posel. Rav am a kosher onusu, Rav says because it's an onus, so Shmuel am a posel had a nevet by Aveira. Shmuel says, look, after all, an Aveira was done with it, it did kill a person, so therefore, so you have reason to still pass all as a korban. So the Gemara says, Mesu, I have a contradiction on Shmuel. I have a contradiction on Rav. Actually, we're going to bring a Braisa, which once we analyze it, then we're going to see that it seems to fit better with Shmuel's opinion. A Braisa says, how do we know there are certain kinds of animals that are possible for a korban where something wrong was done with them? You have the pasuk says like this: you bring your korban min habehema, from the animals, min habakar or min atzoin, from the cattle or from the sheep. Soin actually is a general term that includes sheep and goats. Anyway, all those mins are a mute. Min habehema lahotzias areveir v'asanirba. The word min habehema comes to exclude an animal that was used for bestiality, whether it was the active one or whether it was the active one or the passive one. Min habakar lahotzias areveir. The word min habakar comes to exclude an animal that was worshipped as a bodhisattva. So even though again it doesn't become also for a regular person to use it. However, it's also to bring it as a korban. It's considered it's something disgusting to Hashem, and therefore it's not to be brought as a korban. Minatzoin lahotzias amukta. When it continues from the sheep, that comes to exclude mukta, an animal that was set aside to be used as a korban for avodah zarah. So again, it doesn't become also bahanah just by setting it aside, but it does become also to bring it as a korban. And when it says u'minatzoin, when it says and from the sheep, so the extra vav lahotzias anigeach, that comes to exclude an animal that gored and killed the person. Tosfos brings over here an explanation from the Gemara in Tmura that says why are we davka learning, why are we learning from mina behema reveya and nirba and from mina boko nevad and so forth. Why don't we learn the other way? Why don't we learn, for example, the one by mina behema comes to exclude nevad and then the other one comes to exclude reveya and nirba, whatever. The Gemara explains over there why that is. Anyway, Omer Rav Shimon, so Rav Shimon continues in the analysis of this din, so Rav Shimon says, "Im nema reveya lama nema negeach." If you have a posuk that's giving us a mute as far as reveya, then why does it need to say negeach? Can't we learn one from the other? "Im nema negeach lama nema reveya." After all, both of them have the same din that if there were edim, then the animal is going to get skila. So Rav Shimon is saying, given that both of them, if there's edim, the animal is chayiv misa, then it's logical to say that if one of them is also when there's no edim, so therefore there's no skila. If one of them is also as a korban, so is the other. Why do we need to be told otherwise? Why do we need to be told specifically by each one? So he says, "Mepnei sheyesh bereveya shein benegeach, v'yesh benegeach shein bereveya," because each one has a chumra that the other one doesn't have. Reveya also by Onus Kerotzen. When it comes to Reveya, it doesn't matter whether it was by Onus or Berotzen, because like we're saying, whether the animal was Reveya or Nirba, we're learning them from the same pasuk. Nirba is Berotz, is Ba'onis. After all, Nirba is that a man came and used the animal for bestiality. So the animal had no choice in the matter, and still were saying that the dinim, still were saying that the dinim of Reveya and Nirba apply, that if there were Edim, then the animal gets skila, the man also gets but whatever, that we're not dealing with right now. And that if there were no Edim, it's possible for the Mizbeach. So there is a chumra in Reveya and Nirba. Negeach lo also by onus kerotzen. On the other hand, when it comes to goring, we don't treat onus like kerotzen, which is the Gemara is going to bring now, that seems to work better according to Shmuel, that says that that such an animal is possible for a korban. But we'll deal with that after we finish with the braisa. On the other hand, negeach meshalom kofer. On the other hand, when it comes to goring and killing, then you're paying kofer. Reveya in Mashalam is a kofer, and by Reveya, there's no such thing as kofer. Lefika chutzrach loyma Reveya, but chutzrach loyma negeach. Therefore, says Reb Shimon, that is why the Torah needs to mention Reveya, which includes also Nirba and negeach separately, because you couldn't have learned one from the other. In fact, Tosfos says, and Marsho explains Tosfos, that's why we also couldn't have one pasuk and say that we learn the more chomer one from it, and then we'll learn the other kal by a kal v'chomer, because if we only had one pasuk, we would say it applies only to one of them. We wouldn't even think to make a kal v'chomer, because each one has, it's unique, there's not really a kal and a chomer, because each one has a chomer over the other. Anyway, the Gemara says Katoni Mia. So Reb Shimon is saying Reveya also by Onus Kerotzen, Negeach like also by Onus Kerotzen. That was saying that by Negeach we're not treating Onus like Rotzen. Now Lamai Hilchsa, as far as what halacha, Lav LeKorban, wouldn't it be? After all, the context of the Braisa is talking about what animals are usable and not usable for korbanos. So therefore, we would assume that when it says it doesn't make onus like rotzen when it comes to negeach, is as far as korbanos. So therefore, that would bear out Shmuel's point that when the animal was onus to that when the animal is onus to gore and to kill, then it's not possible in a korban. So the Gemara says, "Loi, not necessarily look taller. No, it may mean as far as the animal being given skila." That was saying that when it was ba'onus, when it was reveya v'nirba, it doesn't matter whether it was ba'onus or berotzen, either way, the animal is high of skila, whereas when it comes to negeach, then not. So Rav Shimon is saying that once we find by Misa, then we have a Chumra in one over the other, then therefore we can't say necessarily that we would learn one from the other when it comes to korbanos, because we have a Chumra in a different area of halacha, namely as far as the Misa of the end. And the Gemara says, In fact, it's more logical to say that Reb Shimon is referring to that. The Amrit LeKorban, if Reb Shimon is saying as far as a Korban and saying that you couldn't have learned one from the other, Negeach La'osava Onus Kerotzen, what do you mean? Lav Onus Dideksiv, Lav Rotzen Dideksiv. When it comes to going, the Pasuk doesn't explicitly say anything about Onus or Rotzen. Or rather, when it comes to a korban, when it comes to the soul of a korban, the Torah never makes any such distinction. So what do you mean? So when Reb Shimon uses the expression loy osa by onus kerotzen, we don't treat an onus like rotzen, but the Torah itself never actually says that that onus or rotzen comes into play over here when it comes to fitness for korbanos. El alav l'ktola. Therefore, obviously, Reb Shimon must be referring to Misa and saying that. When it comes to Misa, when it comes to Skila, there was going to be a difference whether the animal did it by Onus or Beratzen, where by Reveya v'Nirba, we're not going to make such a distinction, whereas by Negeach, we will. So the Braisa is not a contradiction to Shmuel, but it's not necessarily proving his point either. So we'll continue tomorrow, Best Hashem, analyzing this Braisa, and then go on to talk more about these dinim, about when a shur kills a person, and the dinim of what come into play then.
Yeah, Shikaya.